I know I'm going to get this deal. You just know this order's coming in, and then it just goes quiet. Your boss is asking you an update on this pipeline deal, and you don't have one, and you're just freaking out.
We're continuing our conversation with Luke Allen of OHD. He is the SVP of Sales, and today is our guest on Aligned. Aligned is the podcast for executives of middle market companies seeking to improve sales and marketing ROI. I'm Sean Doyle, your host for today's episode. Let's get to our conversation with Luke.
Rolling.
Action. Luke, thanks for being willing to stay a little bit and continue the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's recap of where we were. We had established your expertise as the SVP of sales of an international organization. Been doing this your whole life. And as a millennial,
yes.
A young guy.
Right.
Albeit some gray hair.
Some gray, yeah. We covered that, yeah, last time.
I'm the old fart marketer, right?
Yeah.
Boomer. Now, admittedly, I was born in 64, so that's like the last year.
I'm a very young
boomer.
Right.
Just for clarification. And we were having a discussion about not only sales and marketing, but specifically late stage deals. And one of my favorite parts of the conversation was when you were talking about something a boomer would like, right? The handwritten note.
Right.
And after our session, the producer shared his story. So we've asked him to jump on.
Wow. Usually you guys just keep me in the basement and throw meat down the stairs. It's truly an honor to be here.
Well, look at the sunlight and enjoy it.
Ah, I do need vitamin D.
Tell us your story.
Last week, or the last episode when you guys discussed that, I'm a producer. I'm an engineer and a voice actor as well. We work with voice actors all across the United States. And one that we have that I am now, after years of working together, we'd become fast friends. And she's just an amazing voice actor named Kelly Buttrick. And the way she got into our business was she sought us out using a handwritten letter, a box of goodies, a follow-up email, and a phone call. And she has made, I don't need to discuss how much money she has made from our business, but it is a considerable amount that would get you a nice lake house somewhere, I do believe. But just in everything that you're talking about with being relational and being purposeful about making those relationships and remembering small details about so-and-so really loves that team or they like dark chocolate. Those are those things that shock the... I really think that these days it shocks the client because they don't expect it. Right. No one expects anything other than junk mail. Exactly. And when you get the handwritten letter, it makes you happy.
Yeah. A handwritten letter can still be junk mail if it's not sincere. You know, if you didn't
True.
Take
yeah,
the time to
point.
Listen, you know, if you and or it can be really salesy. If I, you know, prodded you till I knew you're a football fan and then I,
sure.
you know, asked you about why, you know, what or who or, you know, then that could be a little insincere. I don't know. I love handwritten notes. I do.
Yeah.
They still have to be done well.
Well,
What would you say? What worked with the note that you got, man?
Well, I'll tell you, there is one behind the wall. Let me grab it real quick.
That in the basement wall.
So this is from a voice actor who, again, sought us out online, and she had sent me an email and then just sent me a nice handwritten postcard that on the front has her, it says Rachel Porter, VO, youthful, fresh, intuitive. And then on the back, it says Happy Spring, hello from Casey, I hope business is going well. We have the partnership together. I can't really read her handwriting that much. Some projects this year. Best, Rachel. Just a nice, friendly, you know, Happy Spring, because I think I'd mentioned it was pollen season, you know, but it was just a timely touch. Yeah. Meant a lot to me. So
it's great.
Let's see what the date is. March of 2019 that it's been hanging up on my wall.
Yeah.
That's
so
great.
She'll get future work.
It's awesome.
Well, I thought it was a fun story of a postcard that became worth millions.
Yeah.
Well, I can't vouch that it was millions, but
sounds good.
Real good.
Today, what I'd love to go back to the basement, Van.
Thank you. I'm going back down there.
Today, I would love to visit more about these late stage prospects and late stage techniques that sales, I hate to call them techniques.
Yeah.
It makes it sound so clinical and like you're doing something to somebody. It's not a technique. They've
got
to be done sincerely. In fact, one thing, if you go to Luke's LinkedIn quotes, one thing it talks about is your sincerity and that you have client first. And
oh, thanks.
Yeah, prospects figure out fast if you're selling for your purposes or for their purposes.
Right.
All that said, let's get rid of the word technique. My bad.
Yeah.
We had talked something about what we call in cognitive marketing the conversion from preparation, which is typically when marketing has handed sales a lead in the beginning. Somebody has indicated some way that they're interested in to begin to prepare themselves for a change. That might be buying a new product, a new service, and moving them over into action. So action is this late stage moment where you're looking for budgets, the resources are assigned, the problem is there, it's clear. There is ownership of this problem with the person you're talking to. And they're asking you even literally, give me a proposal. Like, I wanna know what this is going to cost. But also behavioral science tells us, and this is a big mistake I see in sales, maybe we'll side trail for this a little bit, is what something costs is not just money, it's time, right?
Time,
it's
yeah.
operational. You mentioned at the very end of our last segment that there's a technical salesperson, somebody coming in to help with all those details.
Sure.
Do you split apart that question when someone says, yeah, I want a proposal? Do you cognizantly put out two sections, here's the money and here's all the cost of change?
Well, I think if you have a product or a service or solution that has that benefit, then yes, it's important to lay those out. So for us specifically, our technology is new. So it brings some new advancements. And so some of those are monetarily, you know, we need a quote, how much is it going to cost in real dollars, right? But then you also have the side of, well, how much money will it save us in time savings, or in you know, will we have time to allocate to other things, or you know, however that lays out. So, absolutely, it's important to document those and put them where they're not all lumped together. For us, we separate those very clearly, so we have a cost of the instrument and how that compares to competitors. But then we very clearly lay out what the ongoing cost of owning it, operating it, maintaining it. And then what is the savings in time and efforts? How does that look? So, again, I think that's important to know the customer. And for us, some people don't care about the time savings as much as they do the initial investment. Some people care less about the initial investment and more about what's it going to save me over 10 years. So technical sales and marketing has to be fluid and move into those spaces the right way.
That's great. I think one thing that we've seen, we've built something called a marketing technology maturity index. It's a great name.
Wow,
right?
Yeah.
I should get an advertiser to help me with that.
Yeah, save that three times fast.
The idea of the index is when we're helping somebody install or implement some sort of marketing technology, we need to understand where they are in the process. Are they ready for really sophisticated insights, AI, or do they need a good CRM system, something really basic that talks?
Entry level,
you know. So in that journey, one thing we've learned is that to make a recommendation about technology in marketing and sales, you have to talk about all the cost of change that's beyond the product, right? The price of the object, I think, is what you just said. That's great. Well, something like that.
Sure.
So we are currently in a conversation. Salesman got into our client. Not our salesman. Some other salesman got into our client and convinced them that this piece of marketing technology would be a great fit. They loved how it integrated with the product. It made so much sense. It presented well. So a client called us and said, hey, we need to switch our marketing technology from A to B. And we said, well, let's talk about that a little bit. So by the time we took what their software tech cost, and we did the conversion, and we did the integration, and we did the additional cost, because we can do, in the technology he's in now, we can do something in an hour that in this other technology might take 2 to 3.
Oh, wow.
So you start looking at all those costs, the cost of change, the soft cost, you might call them, then that really matters. So
Absolutely.
We talked in our last episode about when you've got those early, late-stage prospects, people are moving, and the tools that marketing can help sales. With emotional tools, rational tools, and then this idea of creating tools like that private and public commitments, ways that sales can make that transition. For example, things like pilot projects or iPad calculators or some sort of exchange modeling. Now that we're in this late stage, Two things, I think. I'm not trying to set you up for an A or a B here.
Good, okay.
But the sales gets heightened, right? The stress is heightened.
Yeah.
So I'm a salesman. Anybody that messes up my deal, that's cash, right?
Right.
Absolutely. I'm losing cash now. So marketers have to understand when they wonder why our delightful ideas aren't accepted.
Yeah.
They're not playing with your paycheck, but you're playing with their paycheck.
With their, sure.
How would you tell a marketer to approach that salesperson who does have good ideas, who does have good ways to help?
Yeah, I think, again, going back to last episode, the alignment side has to be there. So you have to have teams that work together, which is a culture thing. That's pivotal and key to success there. So you have to have that alignment where a salesperson trusts a marketing person that's bringing ideas. Even if they don't agree with those or go with all of them, there's got to be that open discussion on how both people can come together and bring the positive result. But you're right about the salesperson is so focused at the end of this buying piece. They've, you know, for us, a 12 to 18 month buying cycle. They're hungry. They're very focused on closing this deal. Anything that's a threat to that is going to be seen as that, you know,
inside
which is
or out.
Inside or out, yeah. And like a lot of things with your family at home, sometimes it's easier to be harder on things that are inside than out, you know. So if it's a marketing person in your company, you're quick to tell them, hey,
I got it.
Yeah, I got it. This is what I do. You know, you stay in your lane. Let me stay in my lane. Yeah. And that also, Sean, to me, another mistake that salespeople make is when they feel that pressure, they almost overcompensate for follow up on the deal, or on the buyer, or on the person because they feel that pressure. And some people can take that, and that leads them to too much follow-up, too many calls, too many emails, too many touch points. And that's something we found in our business, that when you have, again, an aggressive sales culture, you have to dial that back at certain parts of the process, or you're going to run people off, or you're going to, you know, make them angry, all these different things that we've all felt when we've tried to buy a product. You know, good salespeople have to know when to step that back as well.
Yeah, I was taught that when, as a salesman, I was taught that when somebody asks you for a proposal, every second that passes from that moment is against you. So that would lead me to be hyper aggressive.
Yeah, you hear time kills deals. I mean, that's a thing that everybody, so you feel that pressure,
So what's the balance? I mean, obviously you could keep track of things and you could see when you lose deals and get deals. There's some amazing technology coming out of Israel right now that uses AI to listen to words and looks at time cadences and identifies what the most successful paths are. So there's the future of AI is going to impact this dialogue. But intuitively.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I think really some of it goes back to the relationship part that we talked about earlier, which we led off with the note piece that people, you know, might or might not really agree with. But, you know, I say give something like that a try and see how that works. But to me, the only way you really stay close at that late stage buy without feeling the pressure of constantly needing an update, you know, and you're just flipping out about, I haven't heard from Sean in a day, you know, and people are telling you, you know, outside looking in, they're saying you're overreacting, is if you have that relationship, you really can get those updates from the buyer or from the person inside. And really the best salespeople create relationships to where the buyer really feels like they're buying a solution and a product, but they're buying it from somebody they really like and they really want to work with. And that makes the overall experience, again, even better than what most people are experiencing today when they buy a product online or, you know, through a retailer. You know, great, you know, Amazon has a great business, but let's be honest, it's a very distant relationship. So if you can create that in a technical market or in your place of business, wherever it is, the banking world, you mentioned that earlier, that relationship will be a huge difference when you come to these late stages where it gets quiet and it gets delayed and you people are really, they don't like that. They don't like quiet, do they?
Luke, I'm laughing because I remember a story you told me once about you as a younger salesperson who called and called and called. You recall the story?
Yes, I know where you're
headed. Will you tell it?
Yeah, well, you know, I was a young salesperson and I was the hungry person you mentioned earlier. And, you know, I know I'm going to get this deal, you know, and everybody that's probably listening to this podcast, if you're in marketing or sales in any way, you're you can relate to this. You just know this order's coming in, and then it just goes quiet. And you're, you know, your boss is asking you an update on this pipeline deal, and you don't have one, and you're just freaking out. And so I resorted to what most young salespeople do. I just call every day, you know, and email, and then I text, and I'm calling and texting and emailing. And finally, I get someone on the phone, you know, days later, and they say, oh, no, you know, so-and-so has unfortunately passed away. And, you're standing there, and I'm so sorry for your loss, you know, and, yes, it's me that's left 57 voicemails, and it's really not that important in the big scheme of things of what we're talking about now. But I think that's part of it, too, of just understanding that piece of the close is you have to be close enough, but you can't overdo it.
Sometimes stuff just happens.
Sometimes things happen.
And something that was a priority, a genuine priority, moves to not so much of a priority.
Absolutely.
But comes back.
I mean, we ended up, you know, they were looking for this person's replacement, which you would understand. You know, it's it's not an easy fill, right, when someone has that go on. But it eventually went through. But that silence can be, you know, devastating for salespeople.
Oh, absolutely. What a great story. I mean, difficult, touchy, but great story.
Yeah, true story.
Truth is stranger than fiction, right?
Right.
When we're working with sales and the way that we create a dialogue with sales about how to support a sales individual's late stage efforts, we focus on four aspects that are revealed through this cognitive marketing, the behavioral science. And the four are simply helping relationships, positive substitution and countering, environmental controls, and rewards for positive behavior. So an environmental control is such an easy thing. So you think about, why do I take a prospect to go play golf? I take them because I've got 4 hours with them.
Right.
Or more or less, depends how good you play, right?
Right,
Or why, you know, you see people who have a box at a football stadium. Well, they get them. They get their attention. Behavioral science teaches us that if you can get somebody out of their environment, then they're more likely to make a change. Think of some bad habit you've got. Don't name it.
Yeah.
Hold it. If your environment doesn't change, then nothing changes. It's unlikely. So if you're trying to help somebody not drink beer, don't take them to a bar, right?
Yeah.
So inversely, if I want someone to make a behavioral change, then I might take them to a plant tour, or I might bring them to my facility. I might take them offsite to a third party.
Yeah.
And those are not techniques, right? They're really genuinely helpful because it allows change to happen. It allows people to understand and to have an aha moment. We love aha moments.
Sure. So these are steps that you're saying marketing supports sales in.
Right, exactly. Okay. That's the kind of thing marketing can come to a salesman and say, I'm not going to mess up your deal.
Yeah.
I'm going to design an environmental control. I'm going to design an experience at your office so that you can walk in and go, huh, this is different. I didn't expect this. I didn't know this. I learned that. Disney teaches a lot about how to do that. How do you change people's feelings, their perspectives, from everything from the way the materials their feet are touching, walking, or elevation changes and sound. And so that's a way marketer can have a lot of power. And I bet you've heard a salesman say, oh yeah, if we can get them to our office, we close 90% of them.
Yeah.
Well, that's an environmental control.
Sure.
Sometimes you can't get a client to your office. Marketing can build an environmental control that a salesperson can take out. You can we even love, it's old-fashioned, kind of like handwritten notes.
Yeah.
We like things called environmental surrounds, and we would build a system of printed boards that go on easels. So if I'm sitting in my conference room and I'm listening to your pitch, every time a board goes up, it changes visually what I see. We might have them have a little music playing, which is super easy with a Bluetooth speaker now. We might have them have some food in there, which changes the smell from what they normally smell. So you're sitting there as a prospect in your own turf, but you're surrounded by the salesman's boards. You're smelling the smells, hearing the sounds, and watching video. And you know, it changes that environment. Those are really powerful tools. another one is this reward for positive behavior. And I know this is a time-honored challenge. You've had some sales guy come up to you and say, hey, Luke, I want to do X, Y, Z, or I want to take them out. Or worse, you got an expense receipt and said, I already did it. Did this.
Yeah.
how do you rewards do work for positive behavior, just like raising a child, right?
Sure.
How do you define that? How do you construct those rewards so you know your team knows what to do, they know how to go not too far?
Yeah, with customers, you're saying, yeah,
or prospects.
With potential prospects, mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, for us, and everybody's business is different, obviously, in how that works, but I've been trying to get a box at the local college football team, but the company won't go for it. But yeah, for us, we don't have as many customers that can come here, you know, so mm-hmm. other businesses have different ways to do what you just described. For us, marketing is supported creating this environmental control and some of the feeling our culture and our company remotely is through great video, through great telling the story of the company, the culture, you know, who we are, why we do what we do, in a format that salespeople can use it and utilize it. And you know, from our experiences, salespeople, most of our technical salespeople are really good at what they do when it comes to selling and all those things. But the detail behind, you know, you mentioned Disney earlier. One of the things I love about Disney is their attention to detail is just at a whole nother level. And most salespeople, you look at my desk or wherever else, the attention to detail is not my gifting package, mm-hmm. you know. Whereas marketing, they normally are really looking at how does our brand look and what feel does this have. And again, the alignment with sales, if you have good marketing and sales alignment, that end stage where marketing can wrap in and bring that closing touch to really have the customer make that emotional connection and the buy-in is a major win. And for us, you know, taking customers to dinner, doing things like that, we're for that. But I think the customized piece of the video and the different experiences mm-hmm. has been a big advantage.
Another behavioral science-driven process that we see and use. In fact, I've even got a kind of a fun story to share. Is this positive substitution encountering? So we've all made that presentation. We've put our best foot forward with amazing. Everything was great. The graphics were perfect. The numbers were good. The ROI was there for everybody, both sides. You know, it was just that you're going, oh, this is it. And then you hear something like, well, we've asked 5 other companies to come in, and you're, oh my, I didn't know that. I just, yeah. Since we met with you last, we're going to handle this in-house.
Right.
So yeah, those are moments where you can design a positive substitution. So what do I mean by that? We were working once with a manufacturer of a motorcycle. Well, we weren't working with them. They were a prospect. And they said that very thing about, we're going to talk to 8 other companies and see how they'd approach it, which, you know, you roll your eyes on the inside, of course. But because marketing had prepared me for this, I was able to say, well, tell you what, let's do this. It's going to cost me about $20,000 to do the first steps, to take through, to build the numbers, to do what you want me to do. What if I just allow you access to my company and we'll go through the first step of being a new client? At the end of that, I will have not spent a dollar more than going through your RFP process, and you'll have a real sense of what it's like to work with us, and you'll even get a sense of our strategy and our insights. Worst case scenario, I haven't spent money that I was going to spend on the RFP, and you've gotten some results. You've gotten mm-hmm. some strategy, some plan, some direction. And the CEO scratched his head, and he said, I could see he was thinking about all the other people he was going to have to call back and say, hey, I changed my mind.
Yeah, yeah.
So God just gave it to me. So I said, what if you call the other groups and say, the decision-making process has been delayed by 8 weeks? And he said, I can do that. So we did it. And we ended up, you know, launching the brand of this motorcycle.
Oh, wow.
And it was great. And it was all because marketing had equipped me with a substitution, something to offer.
Something to offer.
So I knew ahead of time as a salesman, I could offer
X, Y, and Z. So I love seeing companies that have playbooks that the sales team knows what their boundaries are.
Sure.
And without having to say, let me call Luke.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
which is the old car dealer trick, right?
Yep.
But that's designed to remove control from people.
Sure.
That's a separate technique. It might be worth talking about that, and that is a technique.
Yeah, that is a technique, yeah.
But the last of these four very powerful processes is helping relationships. And I know that you've got this culture of helping and bringing in people what they need, bringing to people what they need. My question is, how do you allow a helping relationship but you don't give away the product? How do you allow a helping relationship without increasing your cost of sales so to such a point that the ROI is not there?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the main thing that we do is that we have a product that justifies and really demands the price point that it has. So the relationship is outside of that, you know. So again, if the value and the message and the benefit is for the person and the customer or the company that is buying this product or service or solution, you can have those things both go together. So you can have the relationship and the relationship that you build along with profitable product sales or service sales. And I do think that is something that salespeople can struggle with on the reverse side. So if they create this great relationship with someone, they almost feel either obligated or they want to throw in, you know, you mentioned a discount or giving away things or whatever. To me, if you fairly built a product or service or solution at a fair price, you know, you're able to deliver that with good conscience in your relationships that you have, where the deliverable is there for both companies and the end user. So that's normally the way that we really get our salespeople to understand what that benefit is. So they're not just artificially saying that; they really believe it.
Do you ever have to tell a salesperson, "Look, you've got 50 hours in this gig, and you just got to let it go"?
Oh yeah, well I think everybody's got either one of those or many of those, right? Where they hang on and hang on and hang on. Yeah.
What do you do? How do you know where the line is? Is it intuition? Is it?
Yeah, I think some of it's intuition and some of it's the indicators that you're looking at. You know, so what are the activities and what are the buying habits? But some of it too is just that ROI time on what we've invested in and where things are. But some of it's not really a straightforward science, though.
Sure,
you never really know.
I feel like there was a story that we wanted to tell, but I can't remember what it was. But while I'm thinking about that story, and it may never come back.
Yeah.
That's the problem of being a boomer. So you millennials would remember.
Right.
I was thinking about something you said earlier, and that was about culture.
Sure.
So when we talk about marketing and sales alignment, I always lead with we've got to create a common dialogue and a common language between marketing and sales. Because you know, even you've read a million things. There's the consumer decision journey, coined largely by McKinsey, that defined this idea of the steps and the processes. Then you get into the behavioral science, like we've applied it, and then you get into these arrows in your quiver, these nine processes and how to use them. Well, that's great if marketing knows all that, but if sales has a different pipeline. And there may be a logical, I've seen a lot of different pipelines. I've seen pipelines with 70 steps, highly engineered, too many steps.
Too many,
But you know, sales is talking about one thing, marketing is talking about another thing. You've got to have this common language. So that may be a fairly obvious thing to do as a first step, is identify what we're going to call things and all agree on it. You then said something about culture and language, it connected with me. Language really is, you can't have a culture without a language, right?
Right.
So maybe I've just got this infinitesimal understanding of culture and how to create these culture. Tell me a little bit more about what you were thinking.
Yeah, and I'm sure we could probably do a whole podcast on culture.
Oh, we could string people along.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ever.
But that's a buzzword right now, and I'm sure there's 1,000 podcasts that are talking about it. But culture to me is the most important ingredient in this overall recipe. To me, it drives results, it drives language, it drives commitment and alignment. If you don't hire to culture, trained to culture. You're not going to retain the right talent. You're not going to attract the right talent in whatever role that you're looking at. And for us, we get the sales and marketing alignment because the culture of what we've developed has built the language to where our marketing person is so bought in on their role, and they really celebrate the success of, you know, the salesperson and the outcome of closing deals, and they're intimately involved in tracking that. So they see their fingerprint on the deal all the way through. And then the salesperson sees the reverse of that. They are in support of what we're doing from a marketing standpoint, with whether it's, you know, outside agencies or internal marketing, because the salesperson intimately knows how that's going to impact their job, their income stream, and so on and so forth. And to me, that open culture and bringing in the right people builds out the successful buy-in from all the different parts. So it's an important process, and nobody falls in to the right culture. It's something you literally have to intentionally develop. And everyone has a culture. It's just most people don't have the culture they really want, or they tell their friends at the golf course about, or at their business group. When everyone says, "Well, how's your company culture?" Most people say, "It's great. You know, everything's good, and people love to work here." But if you did a culture survey with their people, you'd probably find out a little something different. But it is an important thing, and I think it gets overhyped that millennials have more importance in culture. I think it's been there forever. I just think it manifests itself in a different way with people in my generation or younger, in that with the job market that we're in now and some of the dynamics, people are moving and they're moving to different companies and they know what different companies offer. It's information is so widely available that it means you need to focus on that. And if you're not, you're going to be at a disadvantage against competitors or in your market, but even outside of your market, with the way people can use their job skills in different ways. So for us, that's the building block of culture, and it makes these initiatives easier because you have people bought in.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So you would actually enjoy knowing this. Maybe you do know it, but you invest in our company with a role called sales enablement. So we're providing that communication link between marketing and sales and supporting your marketing director. The sales enablement guy at my office celebrates when y'all get deals too.
Exactly.
We actually hear about it.
Yeah.
I mean, he'll bring it up. We have a formal time weekly to share good news from clients. But he'll just occasionally hear, "Yeah, they got another couple deals."
Yeah.
So that culture is infectious outside your walls.
Sure.
And that's great. So yeah, you're that's a whole nother conversation.
We'll
dive into that someday. I think after listening to you and knowing some of my intent, I hope that people, and I'll ask you this same question, I hope that people walk away with this knowing that late stage marketing should be involved. It may not have been involved in the past, and if it's not, it's because you don't have an understanding of how, or your marketer doesn't have an understanding of how to participate. Or maybe sales hasn't trusted marketing to be involved, and maybe they haven't earned the trust either. Earning trust is part of a culture, right?
Right, it is, yeah.
So we shared a few of the processes that we teach and help our clients with. I hope that helps a little bit to at least give an inkling, a little tiny understanding of what you could do with marketing to support late-stage sales. And I think that's been an interesting part of the conversation. What do you hope people got out of this?
To me, this has been something that I think really the benefit of what we've talked about these first two episodes are really applicable from executives down through sales and marketing and understanding how those work together. And we're all in for the same outcome, or we should be. So we've got to find that alignment. So my hope would be that people take out of this that there is a way to have that alignment, which is probably something that people thought might not be even possible. Mm-hmm. And if they don't have it within their companies, hopefully we gave some examples of how to start that process, how to find people that can help guide that. So hopefully that's what people got out of some of this time.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah, now, thank you, Sean. Enjoyed it.
Being the aged man that I am, I think I got to wrap it up for the day.
Yeah, I'm surprised you haven't gone to bed yet.
Join us on the next episode when we talk with Anna Savarni and Will Riley about sales enablement on Aligned, the podcast.